Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, we're going to talk about something that shows up a lot. It should be showing up a lot. It should not be much of an issue as it is. But unfortunately, especially with younger people, Gen Z and millennials, pretty much everybody 45 and under in America, which there are millions and millions and millions of them, the issue of socialism is increasingly becoming a major problem, not just in the here and the now. For example, on the heels of Bernie Sanders in both 2016 and 2020, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's a member of the Democratic Socialists of America organization, according to a news report from Axios, over 40 socialists have won in primary elections this year. And the membership of the Democrat Socialists of America has grown from 7,000 members to 50,000 since 2016. In 4 years, it's gone from 7,000 members to 50,000 members. So it is quite popular and quite growing. You've got a recent YouGov poll shows that close to 70% of millennials favor socialism and would likely vote for a socialist candidate. That's not a typo. The same poll says that 64% of Gen Z are similarly inclined. For many millennials, it's the staggering college debt, which now totals around $1.5 trillion. Timing is always good. And the Lord is always doing some things. Last night with my son, Hayden, who was on the show recently, and we did the last episode of Who Is This SOB podcast together because he's not nearly as conservative on a lot of things as his parents. So that was the whole point of that podcast with the Who Is This SOB. So if you struggle with that at any level with friends or family or your own kids or your parents or whatever the case may be, you want to go listen to that podcast episode. We sat here in the studio for an hour and a half. And went through the history of him growing up in an uber conservative home, going off to college, which was not a liberal arts college. But then he comes home after spending time with people that didn't really see the world the same way we did. And he had some different political opinions, even though he's a great, strong follower of Jesus Christ, has a solid biblical worldview, but plays that out differently in some political realms. But with his friend was over last night because Hayden's stuck here now. He's supposed to be in San Francisco, but broke his ankle about 2 weeks ago. And so we were going to go out there. So now he's stuck here for, I don't know, 6 weeks or whatever. So he had a good friend over last night. He's been a friend of the family for years. And we ended up getting into almost an hour long discussion about socialism versus capitalism. Hayden's 25. His buddy's about 25. And capitalism is downright evil and has led to massive income distribution problems and the abuse of power. They're all in bed with the government. And so you chuck the whole system. Socialism will equal things out, will take care of people. And so I appreciate the heart behind it, but the heart behind it isn't dealing with the history behind it and not and the actual results of socialism around the world. So this is also a subject for my buddy Bill Mann with MentorLink, who's been writing about this a lot. I love the fact that you're kind of semi-retired now, because you become a great little researcher.
Yeah.
So I get my daily dose emails from Bill Mann.
Yeah, I said, look at this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's just staggering. And in the world of mentoring, which God has given you a heart for, and praise the Lord for that, and we need more of that, socialism is a big, big deal. It's growing. It's here in America. Bill's a little bit older than me. And so will we see it come to total fruition here in our years left on this earth? I don't know about that, but it is definitely a growing problem. Why is it something that's showing up on your radar screen a lot?
Well, you know, I write a blog which is mentoring the next generation. And so in the course of that, I've been doing this for 5 years, and, it kept popping up. It kept popping up as socialism is, and I've sort of said, well, let me just tackle that issue and see. And you cited the statistics where the next generation, millennials, 70%, the Gen Z, 64% are favorable towards socialism. And all of a sudden I realized that there's a disconnect here. Part of it is because of their education. Part of it is they don't understand history.
Yeah.
And if they understood history, which is probably one of the purposes of this program, then they might have a better understanding of what it is and what it's not. We'll get into it, but I look at all the countries that are sort of socialist.
Yeah, and I would put air quotes around that.
I mean, the ones that are communist, your communist communists is China, Russia, Laos, Vietnam, North Korea.
Yep.
So who's basically saying, I'm fleeing capitalism and I'm going to move there?
Right. Nobody.
Nobody. And so that's sort of the acid test, saying, well, if it was so good, why don't you go there?
Right.
And the answer is, no, the capital system is actually better. It has its flaws. Every system has its flaws. But we need to talk about those flaws and sort of point them out and share the historical background of why it has failed every time it's been tried.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that the millennials and Gen Z, younger people in general, America in general, as it becomes more and more secular, despite the fact that you still got about 70% of Americans that will self-identify as Christian, that doesn't mean much to me. It doesn't mean much once you dig into that. But with an increasingly secularized nation, I think that a lot of these millennials, and that came up in the conversation last night, although he has a biblical worldview, so he understands the nature of sin, but most people don't. And so they look at capitalism, they don't factor sin in as much. They look at socialism and think, well, that's going to take care of it. Equality is the buzzword for younger people now. So like here is that this is from a study, equality. So what is asking people, what does this mean? What does socialism mean? So in 1949, when they Gallup did a first poll with Americans' views on the term socialism, when it came to the question of equality, does socialism stand for equality? In 1949, 12% of the respondents said yes. In 2018, that jumped up to 23%. Go back in time, in 1949, government ownership of or control, government ownership of utilities, everything controlled by the government, state control of business. In 1949, 34% of the respondents said, yep, that's socialism. In 2018, only 17% said that's socialism. Yeah. So there's this feeling about socialism. There's the notion of socialism equals equality. And then there's socialism as an economic engine and a governmental engine. And that I think that's where we have the big divide.
Right. I agree with that. And you know, part of it, again, I've been around for three quarters of a century and have seen this play out before. And that's what's kind of interesting. It goes back into... as I've sort of chronologed in some of my posts, what actually happened in World War II is a bunch of German philosophers came here and ended up in the university system, and they came from what's called the Frankfurt School.
Right.
And they basically realized, Karl Marx, by the way, who died in 1883, basically nothing happened on his watch, but he left the footprint for them to follow. And his whole model was that Marxism, socialism, was going to end up being a capitalist economic upheaval.
Yep. Yeah, I've got something because one of the articles you shared with me, the university Marxists have been lying in wait for young Americans since World War II. It's a bomb that was planted deep and planted effectively. It's going off now in the shrapnel we see happening across the platform known as the United States of America. We're going to pick it up there, talk about education, talk about the ins and outs of socialism, and what do we do about all this when we come back.
Waiting for a message in the sky, a miracle, a sign from...
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. Thanks for being here today talking about a very important subject, a subject that's gaining ground, unfortunately, more and more every day. It's the subject of socialism. I'm here with my good friend Bill Mann, who's part of MentorLink, which is an international organization. Tell everybody real quick, Bill, about MentorLink. Bill's been on before. We usually will talk about mentoring. But because he's mentoring, especially focusing on mentoring the next generation here in America and unfortunately around the world, seems to be just basically falling in love with the notion of socialism. The problem is they don't really understand what it is. They don't understand the historical context of it. I think they have some noble goals with it, but don't understand exactly what's going to happen when you try to use that as a tool for equality. You get anything but. But real quick about MentorLink.
Yeah, MentorLink actually is a leadership platform ministry, and we work with pastors around the world. I think I forget how many countries we're in, 50 plus. And we basically get pastors to really invert their leadership model from a top-down model to a bottoms-up servant model. And so what generally happens in almost in every country, it's kind of interesting, no matter where it is, most pastors don't get any biblical training in leadership. As a matter of fact, it's not taught in the seminar. So as a consequence, when they come out of seminary or they end up being a pastor in a church, they look around for a secular model to say, what does it look like? And they'll pick pretty much the same one. So in America, that model is the CEO model, the top-down. In Africa, it's the chief. In Asia, it's the strong man, but it's all a power based.
Yeah,
and so we have to go in and take them from the model which is top down to the model which is bottoms up, And it's transformational. I mean, I've done the trainings, and about halfway through the trainings, they'll come up to me and say, we get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
We get it.
The lights go on.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. We're talking about socialism today. By the way, website for MentorLink?
Oh, www.mentorlink.org.
MentorLink.org. We're talking about socialism today and trying to understand why is that so popular today, especially with millennials and Gen Z, essentially people 45 and under. You mentioned Frankfurt, and a lot of people don't even know about this. So I'm reading from an article that you shared with me, and I've seen this in other places. This is a section called the Ideology and Its Teachers. So this is how we're looking back on the last 50, 60, 70 years in America, and how do we end up in a place today where we have so many people, young people, embracing the notion of socialism? We simply cannot understand the contemporary culture war in America without understanding the invasive philosophy of cultural Marxism. This includes a cabal of constructs known as critical theory, multiculturalism, political correctness, intersectionality, identity politics, white privilege, critical race theory, etc. Fleeing Hitler's Germany, this is what Bill was talking about. Before and after World War II, a group of German philosophers and educators planted the seeds of this ideology into our American university system. Men like George Lucas, Herbert Marcuse, and Theodor Adorno of the Frankfurt School in Germany were trained to translate the ideology of Marxism from economic terms into practical cultural terms. Now, this should all start ringing a bell for you guys. This new revolution would not promote bullets, bombs, and bloodshed in the beginning, but seek to smash religion, that would be Christianity, morals, authority, and American patriotism. Okay, so now we've got different goals. Also toward the end of this article, Amir Kaner is the president of Truett McConnell University, which I think down is in Georgia. How to spot a Marxist at your college or seminary. So here's 10 points. Now, see, this sounds familiar. Socialism over capitalism, check. Censorship of thought over freedom of speech, check. Anti-Americanism over American exceptionalism, check. Materialism over theism, check. Equal outcome over equal opportunity, yep. Legal conformity over free dissent, definitely. Parental government over limited government, absolutely. Revisionist history, structural sins over personal responsibility, centralized globalism over patriotic nationalism. Did I miss anything, Bill?
I think you nailed it.
And so how do we, if people say, okay, Bill, and you're mentoring somebody younger, you say you just don't understand socialism. So help us, how would you define socialism?
Well,
what is it?
It can be broadly defined, but basically it's an economic construct whereby the state basically owns the means of production. That means you have no rights to personal property. That's kind of the essence of it. And actually, just so you know, it actually does work. And probably the simplest illustration that works here in the United States is the Amish community. And I didn't even know this till lunchtime today, but the Amish community, when you join the Amish community, the community owns all of the property. And they'll give you a plot for you to think, but you don't own your house. And what happens is, as your family grows, and they actually shift around. So it's a communal ownership, and it works at that level. In a micro level, it does not work in a macro level.
Right. And the people will wrongly point to Acts and say, oh, well, Jesus in the book of Acts, that was Marxism, that was socialism, because they all took care of everybody according to their needs.
That's Acts 2, yeah.
Except that was individuals following the Lord who chose to sell their own stuff.
Right.
And make the volitional decision to give it to others. I'm going to sacrifice some of my stuff. And by the way, how'd you get that stuff? Oh, I earned it and I bought it. Okay, so I have this stuff. I see people in need. I sell my stuff. I give the money to help them. That is not socialism. That's actually capitalism with the spirit of the Lord driving your generosity.
Right.
But Marxism, and then, of course, socialism in terms of an engine, economic engine, is, yeah, there is no private property ownership. And the collective owns everything. But who's the collective? And then who's going to control that? So you're always going to have a boss, right? Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Meet the new boss. Well, in theory, what you end up with is a majority rule model, almost an Athenian democracy. Well, that's fine in theory, but in the reality is at some point in time, somebody's got to make a decision.
Right.
So what happens is that gets played into a
top-down
model, and somebody at the top is making the call for you, because he's not going to have votes on everything that happens.
Yeah,
and so that's where it goes off the chart.
Yeah.
So for me, what's interesting is when people we're talking about this, my sort of suggestion is you need to talk to somebody who's lived through this.
Mm, yep.
And you, anybody, I gave the illustration of my daughter's father-in-law, and his family fled Nazi. By the way, the Nazi thing was originally a socialist democratic.
Right, of course, yep.
Yeah, that was the sheep and wolf's clothing, which then got taken over by Hitler. So his family fled from Germany to Ettingen, Germany, to a small town in Austria and sort of hunkered down and then came to the United States. Well, he became a Russian expert, taught at the university, and ended up in the Moscow. He became the interpreter for 10 years in the Moscow industry just when perestroika and glasnost was happening under Gorbachev. And so what was happening there was that Gorbachev realized that basically the communist model doesn't work. So and it's kind of sort of – there's going to be a sort of a 30,000-point view. But in Russia, what in the USSR happened was you had a change at the political level but not at the economic level.
Right, right.
And in China, it's the reverse, where you have no change at the political level, but there has been some capitalism
right
underneath it. So you have two sort of...
Yeah, because the engine will not last without capitalism.
Yeah.
And so that's why with the conversation I had last night with my son's friend, we were talking about what engine, tapping into a millennial, a Gen Z, who has a big heart, very empathetic, wants to help everybody, what engine is going to give you the most resources by which you can help the most people? And then, now you're, I think what they want is capitalism with more of a heart instead of socialism, which rips the heart out of everybody that's underneath it. We're talking to Bill Mann. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back.
I won't be here.
Talking to Bill Mann today here in the studio. It's Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. Talking about socialism today. We're going to queue up and play for you a clip. It's about 2 minutes from Dennis Prager. Does great videos, all kinds of subjects. One of the best out there. And one of his younger guys was out on a college campus in California. I'm going to get to that in a second. But socialism, one of the things behind socialism and communism, Marxism, is there is a spiritual darkness behind all this. Satan masquerades as an angel of light. So Bill does a lot of mentoring work. He writes on it, blogs on it, does it himself. And so one of the things with the younger generation, one of the things I love about them is I think they're very big-hearted.
Yep, no question.
They're looking for a way to impact the world. They have a soft heart. They're very empathetic. That's why I think BLM and the George Floyd thing is their 9/11. They can't, I got to do something. So what did we do after 9/11? We wrote checks. What did they do after George Floyd? They went to protest. And you can feel good about yourself. You think you're helping society. But one of the things we have to remember is you got to have a relationship here. You got to get in a relationship and stay in a relationship, which then leads to conversation. Bill's just an expert and does this so well, where you said off the air, listening. You have to listen. When you go to a mentor, we think, well, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to tell you what for, right? But mentoring is really effectively is listening.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned the two ears and one mouth, and we should probably do the math on that one and recall that. But this Gen Z, so this is from an article. I don't know where I found this one. This was actually on CNN, but don't tune me out just because it's CNN. Jacqueline Cornyn had gone through active shooter drills and classroom evacuation plans, but she is still shocked when one of the deadliest school shootings in history took place in her own community. That was Parkland, Florida, okay, in 2018. We were the generation that grew up post 9/11 in a country filled with violence, she said. It was one of the founding members of March for Our Lives. I'm only telling you guys this. I'm reading this so that we can understand the heart of this generation, okay? You got to understand that. Then you can start to understand what is their fascination with socialism. Born between the years of 1996 and 2010, Gen Zers have grown up in an era where gun violence is frequent, immigration is a hotly debated topic, and the deteriorating climate is acknowledged as a crisis. They are now coming of age during a global pandemic that is disproportionately affecting Black and brown communities. And as protesters take to the streets to call out racism and police brutality, 1 in 10 eligible voters this November will be a member of Gen Z. Okay, you got to remember that. They are a large group, and they are growing, and they're getting more and more involved. They're digitally connected. There's no longer distance doesn't matter. Socioeconomic differences do not matter. They can all come together, which is why you could get a couple hundred people in downtown Chicago on Sunday night in the blink of an eye because they're that well connected. But what do they think about socialism and capitalism? Let's play this. This is a part of a video from Prager University on a campus talking to college students in California And by the way, don't dismiss it because it's California. This is pretty normal across the country. What do they think about socialism and capitalism?
What's up, guys? This is Will Witt with PragerU, and 70% of millennials say they would likely vote for a socialist. We're here at Cal State LA asking people if they can even define what socialism is and seeing what they think about capitalism. Let's do it. How would you define socialism?
Socialism. That's a good question.
I don't even know what that is. I mean, I know what it is, but I can't think right now. I just woke up.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like socializing with others? Like getting to somebody? Or what?
No.
Politics?
Yeah. Like the economic system.
I think it's like equality for all.
But isn't it like sharing? Like everything is evenly distributed throughout to everybody?
It's more like a helping everyone else. It's like if you have enough, why not give to who doesn't have it?
How would you define capitalism?
I don't know what that is.
Fair enough. No, that's okay. That's why I'm here. I'm here to educate. How would you define capitalism?
Capitalism is evil. I think it gives like a running start to most people who have money for it, but it gives a really big disadvantage for people who are like in the lower class, middle class.
So capitalism is like, imagine you have $5 and I have a sandwich and you want that sandwich and I want $5. We then trade. And now I have the $5 and you have the sandwich. It's like a voluntary exchange of goods, you know what I mean? Like a business makes a product and then sells it to someone else. It's like voluntary, you know? You choose, you know, versus like the government, should be like socialism, the government coming in and saying, you need to give her a phone because she doesn't have one, redistributing the wealth.
Okay, now I'm getting the gist of what you're saying.
Would you say you're like a fan of like socialized medicine, something like that? Free healthcare in the American
system. Of course. I definitely do stand by the truth that Medicare is a right, not a privilege.
Do you trust the government?
No.
No? So imagine if the government, who you don't trust, was now running your healthcare and telling you what kind of services you had to get with your healthcare.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't be okay with that.
Right? Like, you've been to the DMV before?
Yes.
Yeah. See, like, how terrible DMV is awful?
It's really bad. Yeah. It's really bad, yeah.
Now, imagine if the DMV, if the people who worked in the DMV then did your health care.
It would be horrible. Like, it would just... Yeah.
It's not a good move.
No, not at all. Do you think that would be very good health care?
No.
That's like what socialism would kind of be like when you put bureaucrats in charge of industry. Like, bureaucrats in government who are now running all the things in your life instead of you running it for yourself. It's very easy to spend someone else's money when it's not yours. After that, do you think you would still want to support socialism in America?
Nah.
See, what happens is when you talk about it, when you work through it, do you want the DMV in charge of your healthcare?
Yeah.
And because they've dealt with the DMV, these young people, college students, are like, no, that would be horrible.
Yeah.
So they can get it.
They can get it. But one of the things, and this goes way back when I started doing the studying, really the trends of millennials and Gen Z, is there's this uniform distrust of all institutions.
Right.
This preceded any of this.
All institutions. The church.
Church, government. Education, business. So you had that distrust to begin with, and then you sort of fast forward, and you know, quite frankly, the millennials basically have gotten the double whammy because they got 9/11,
yep,
and now they've got this. Just as they're getting on their feet, the 2008.
Right, the 2008, with the bailout, which led to Occupy Wall Street.
So just as they're getting on their feet, they're starting to do families, all of a sudden they get literally the rug pulled out from underneath them.
And who gets the help in the United States of America at the time? It was big business and the ultra wealthy.
Right.
And if you try to dismiss that, you're being intellectually dishonest. Okay, you have to own the fact that we have problems with our free market system based on sin, and it's real. Okay, and so you can't say, well, no, you have to acknowledge that. And if you do acknowledge it with millennials and Gen Z, that's going to help you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But the sin factor also goes into socialism,
right?
Because if you're relying on the flawed person to basically do the right thing every time, it's just not going to work.
No, and then you end up with the French Revolution or the French Constitution, which lasted for 3 years because they thought people are basically good and they're not. And so this socialism, again, they'll point to, this happens a lot, you know this, and most of the people listening to us right now know this. They'll go, well, let's look at Switzerland, let's look at Denmark, let's look at the Netherlands, let's look up there. You know, that those are socialist countries, and the people have a higher standard of living, and everything's going well there. And I was dealing this last night with my son's friend, and I said, okay, so they have a lot of social programs, socialized medicine, a lot of things that they pay high taxes, but where do those dollars come from to provide all that stuff? So I'm trying to get back to in this conversation, what's going to be the best engine that's going to unleash human flourishing based on the image of God that will then provide enough resources so that we can actually then try to have an opportunity for everybody to have a decent standard of living? Well, you go to Denmark and the Netherlands, guess what? Those are free market capitalistic societies.
Absolutely.
With a lot of social programs.
Yeah.
But they're not socialistic.
They're not socialistic. But and I'm actually Swedish. And so I've sort of studied Sweden. By the way, and it sort of goes with the COVID. I don't know if you know this, but in their constitution, they have the right of personal movement.
Hmm.
That's a guaranteed right,
wow,
which is one of the reasons their reaction to the virus was not to lock down everybody. It's still different in Denmark and the other countries. But here's what happens even in the Swedish model, and this is kind of interesting. One of the things that happened under the COVID-19, this is how you think it's great, socialized medicine is great until it happens to you. They basically admitted the bad job that they did was treating the people that were older, and those are the ones. So it turns out that two-thirds of the deaths of the people in Sweden were over 80. And 97% of those never received intensive care treatment.
Wow.
Even though their hospitals were not overwhelmed. And that's because their system said, you're too old, you don't get treatment, you know, just
right,
plan your funeral.
Yeah.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, kind of like death panels that we were talking about with Obamacare.
That was the ACA model. People call it death panels and said, oh, that'll never happen. Well, it does happen.
Yeah, exactly right. And so when you look out there, again, understand that Gen Z, millennials, people 45, mostly 40 and under, are empathetic. I keep taking you back to this so you understand how this is playing out, why they're thinking this way. They're empathetic. They care about the little guy. They see 2008. They see big business. They see the government in bed with big business. 2008 was a perfect example of that. Who gets bailed out? All the big businesses, Wall Street, the guys that really, in many ways, constructed the pyramid that then fell over. Are the ones that get all the help, and all the little guys get shafted. And so, and that sounds like, I know some people out there right now, Bill, are saying, gosh, Steve, I didn't know you were a liberal. Because people hear that and they think liberal.
Yeah.
But we need to own that, don't we?
We do know you don't know that. I mean, I would vote for John Kennedy today because he had it right. Ask not what your country can do for you.
Exactly.
Ask what
right.
you can do for your country.
That's exactly right. As opposed to from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. But you throw the human sin factor in there, socialism literally cannot work. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble with my friend Bill Mann from Mentor Link. A recent poll by YouGov shows that close to 70% of millennials favor socialism and would likely vote for a socialist candidate. The same poll says that 64% of Gen Z are similarly inclined. By the way, they're about one out of every 10 eligible voters this year. They are growing in size. They are coming together because of social media. This is a generation that's ripe for a revolution. And for them to deal with all the social ills, whether it's BLM, income distribution, lack thereof, then they see the great white horse for them is socialism. Because it's all about equality, and that's going to help everybody, and we're going to lift everybody out of poverty because they don't understand history. They don't really understand what socialism is all about. They're thinking and operating emotionally, but they're not thinking historically, and they're not looking at the actual facts. That's the big problem.
That's the big problem. And they're weak on history. As I say, they read headlines. They don't read the story.
Yeah. And if we just come out and say to them, you know this as a mentor, you guys just don't know history. You've been indoctrinated. All we're telling them, in so many words, is you're an idiot. And if you start a conversation with you're an idiot, you're going nowhere.
Yeah, well, what I suggest is here's something you might want to read.
Read. And then we'll talk about it.
And then we'll talk about it.
What'd you think? Ask a lot of questions. Anyway, let's look at kind of the plan, what's going on right underneath our noses.
Yeah, so actually I got this from Terry Turchi, who was an FBI agent back in the 60s and 70s. And he's written a book called In Their Own Words. And he basically chronicled basically the Weatherman, who was the Weather Underground, which was part of SDS, Students for Democratic Society, which was a campus movement. But the Weatherman became the violent part of it, so they split. And in the late 60s and early 70s, they did massive violence, killed people. I mean, it was got – and the FBI infiltrated, designated them as a domestic terrorist organization, infiltrated them, and ended up arresting a number of the leaders. It goes to roost. But they left behind. So basically by 1980, most of the Weathermen had disappeared back into the academia.
Yep.
That's where we're sort of paying the price.
Right, yeah, that's where we're paying the price.
We're paying the price. But they left behind a book. By the way, you can get this on Amazon. This is amazing. It's called The Prairie Fire. Mm. And it gives a six-point strategy on how to basically have a revolution to overturn capitalism. So the 6 points are these, and just think aloud as to what you're seeing in the world. Number one of the plan is to destroy capitalism. Number two is their weapon of choice. Now, this was written 50 years ago.
Yep.
Their weapon of choice is systemic racism and police reform.
This is a plan that was written and distributed 50 years ago.
50 years ago. Number three is identify the victim classes.
Intersectionality. Perfect.
Intersectionality. Number four, organize the victim classes, BLM.
Yeah, BLM.
Number five, engage in the international solidarity with the global movement, which is socialism and communism.
And that's why we saw BLM protests showing up throughout Europe.
Yep.
London, violence everywhere.
Well, one of their keywords is, and you can see it on their website, is they call we have to join together with our comrades.
Right, yeah. Perfect.
Perfect.
Well, BLM leaders, they've said it themselves in a video a couple years ago, yeah. We're trained Marxists.
But for the Christian, the last point is to attack and dethrone God.
You have to.
You have to. And so what I was telling from the history standpoint is we think all this stuff is new, but look at what's going on around the country. And realize that the Black Panthers was one of the other organizations in that same time frame, the 60s and 70s. They demanded that the Oakland police be eliminated.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Gee, where did we get the defund police?
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing new under the sun. This is not a new game. New news is just old news happening to new people.
Yeah, so I mean, that's why you got to look at history and say, how did we get here? So where I would like to go with this is to say, let's talk to the people who basically have lived this.
Yep.
And so one of them is a guy by the name of Garry Kasparov, and you may or may not remember him, but he was the Soviet world chess champion. And he's become a human rights activist, and it's well acquainted with socialism. And he quotes it. He says, I chuckle when I at the irony of Bernie Sanders supporters lecturing me, a former Soviet citizen, on the glories of socialism and what it really means. In practice, it corrodes not only the economy, but the human spirit itself. Mm-hmm. And the ambition and achievement, it also corrodes the ambition and achievement that made modern capitalism possible and brought billions of people out of poverty. It is dangerously absurd. That's just...
Yeah, from somebody that lived it.
That lived it.
And that happens time and time again. Occasionally on shows like Sean Hannity or whatever, Glenn Beck, you'll occasionally hear in Fox News, you'll see this. You're never going to see it on mainstream media. They'll interview people. People will call in. They'll get them on camera, whatever, that grew up in socialistic, communistic areas of the world, Russia, Cuba, wherever. And they're never saying, hey, guys, hey, you in America, I came here because I have the good news.
Yeah.
And the good news is socialism will really save America. They never say that.
Yeah.
Because they're wise and because they've experienced it and they understand history because they lived it, they're waving us off the whole time. This country's moving towards socialism. You're going to destroy yourselves.
Yeah, so to follow up on Kasparov, it says recent polling shows a dip in popularity for free market system, and it's easy to be swayed by a philosophy that promises free stuff. Mm. You know, if you've got college debt, if you've got college debt, it sounds good to get basically free college education. But Kasparov, who lived through socialist system, understood the true cost. And he said, if you want to tell me about the glories of socialism, go say it from a food line in Venezuela, not from Hollywood, not from Vermont.
Wow. There you go. See, and that's our problem, because the socialistic agenda, sadly, underneath our own noses invaded the educational system. Started in the colleges. Now you find it a lot. BLM's doing this through some agenda and some curriculum that they're getting into public schools, including here in Wake County, where we're sitting today in North Carolina. And this has been going on for decades. This is nothing new under the sun. And this is from that article I was referencing. And Deconstructing America from a Capitalist Free Market Economy and Judeo-Christian Moral Foundation, the virtues and values that made America strong must be attacked, eroded, shamed, and destroyed. Thus the cancel culture, right? The new storytellers of change must lift high the oppressed and decry the oppressors. That's BLM and Antifa. The willing media must help make examples of hypocrites, racists, homophobes, Islamophobes. They're talking about us, Bill. Yeah. An undercurrent of fear prevents many patriotic, religious, and traditionally minded people from speaking out and standing up. And that's that brings us at the end of the show to what do we do? Because we are responsible. It's happened on our watch. I'm not responsible for changing the entire country, but I am responsible for my sphere of influence. And that's where I think we all need to be challenged.
Yeah. So, when I do my blogs, I try and say, all right, what did I want to communicate? What's my takeaway? And I always have a mentor takeaway because my blog is somewhat addressed to the mentor generation and say, I'm trying to teach you what these folks are, this next generation is thinking about. But the one point I made in one of my takeaways was they may have a very distorted view of history.
Mm, that's right.
And so one of the things that you can do is to help them with that, to basically say, let's go through history and let's see how it has repeated itself. Because the lessons of history, if ignored, leads to a pretty bad result over time.
Well, and that's where in that conversation I had last night with my son's friend, who's a dear friend of ours, of our family. We love him. Smart young man, loves the Lord, it's always a lot of times they come back to, well, it hasn't been done correctly yet, but it will work once it's done correctly.
Well, that's the sort of soft sell saying, well, we're going to get it right this time.
Right, this time.
The problem is it has never worked and never will work. I mean, it can work in a sort of mini cosm of a kibbutz, for
right.
example. That's
right.
Basically the same model or the Amish community. But it can't in a country that sort of has, I mean, it just doesn't work. It never has. It's just never going to.
And that's why we have to take the time to engage, not denigrate, not insult. You guys are stupid. You don't know your history. You've been brainwashed. If that's part of your regular approach to the millennial generation under 45, to the Gen Z generation, basically 22 and under, if that's your approach, if that's your social media voice, and I make that mistake myself all the time, then you can't even get the conversation started.
No.
You start with an insult, it's all over. You've absolutely fit the pattern of who they expect you to be, so you'll get nowhere.
Well, you still have to speak truth.
Right, but you still have to do that.
Yeah, and so again, it's interactive. You can't lecture them. As a matter of fact, they don't learn by lecture. They learn by collaborating. And,
yep.
And so that's their model of learning, and you got to walk them through it and get them to understand it. I one of the things I try and do is get them to read. Just, don't take my word.
Yeah, don't take my word from it. Yeah. Sometimes it's anybody but me is what they need to hear from. And again, I'll go back to this conversation from last night. We've got about a minute and a half left. He's a young Christian man, dear friend of our sons, good friend of ours. We love him, care for him. And that was about 45 or 50 minutes. And it was tense every once in a while.
I'll bet it's just edgy.
And it's kind of edgy, but trying to understand ultimately, he wants to, and I think this is true, most millennials and Gen Z, how can we help the most number of people, the biggest number of people? We want to see people win. We want to see people cared for. We want the average standard of living to be as high as it can be. And so we were able to get the conversation around, which engine is going to best provide what we both really desire as Christians? But even at one point, and I talked to you about this off the air, when I said, I think God wants human flourishing. We want to maximize. When he hears a word like maximize, it bugged him because he looks at maximize, and to him, I think that's like American exceptionalism and taking advantage
and
bowling over people. Right. I win, you lose. And they don't think like that anymore.
No.
But once you get into it and we have a long-term conversation, 45 minutes, an hour. So my question for you guys is, how much time are you willing to put into conversations in younger people? You say you care about the future of the nation. You're bent out of shape about how ill-informed they are. But is all you're going to do is spend 5 or 10 or 20 seconds on social media? Then you're going to see all of this come to fruition. We have to engage and we have to have conversation. Bill, great seeing you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
As always. And so we'll be back tomorrow. The other side of this, another side of this, is the spiritual darkness. So tomorrow on Theology Thursday with Pastor Chad Harvey, we're going to be talking about powers and principalities. Also, Rob McCoy, one of the pastors that's in trouble with the state of California, is going to call in at the beginning of the show tomorrow. So that's all tomorrow. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.